Golf Smarter number 135 for July 15, 2008.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Conducting business on the golf course with Jennifer Monroe.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week we tap the best minds in golf to help lower your scores with tips, drills, insights, and advice. In conversation with course pros, architects, authors, players, teaching gurus, and coaches, here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for downloading another episode of the Golf Smarter podcast. Today's show is brought to you in part by CaddyTips.com. Get professional caddy advice to your next round at courses in the U.S., Scotland, and Ireland. And by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of spoken word entertainment. Get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today at audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Last episode, I asked you to keep your eye on the Golf Smarter blog for upcoming interviews so that you can provide me with questions that you may have for future guests. There was a great response and questions for Tom Wishon, whom I interviewed yesterday. We'll publish that episode in a few weeks, but make sure you allot a little more time because he was so interesting, so informative, and as always, outspoken. The interview went longer than the 30 minutes that I usually allow. You've also been sending great suggestions for other guests, and I'm looking into as many as I can. Again, I appreciate your suggestions and participation. One of the myths of golf that sometimes works in the favor of those of us who are addicted to playing is that it's a great place to conduct business and close business deals. Personally, every time I'm on the course with a client or potential client, we'll spend about 5% of the time actually hitting the ball, 90% of the round discussing our last shot or the next shot, the course or golf in general, and about 3% of the time talking about business. Sound familiar to you too? I've had more success talking about business after the round than on the course itself. The key to golf and business, though, is learning more about our playing partners and how they conduct their business. For that, I thought it was time to bring back Jennifer Monroe of Golf Mind RX. Last time we discussed how to identify the different golf personalities, but today I really wanted to focus on if you can conduct business on the course and the best way to succeed. Welcome back, Jennifer.
Thank you, Fred.
It's great to have you back on the show.
Well, it's really good to be back. I had a lot of fun last time.
And hopefully you received some positive feedback as well.
I did. Oh. I love those letters.
Oh, good. Good. Well, you know, on the last time that we spoke, we talked about personalities and different personality styles. But today I wanted to focus on conducting business on the golf course. There's this, to me, it's a myth. I mean, people say, oh, well, you know, you got to play golf if you're in business because you can get so much business taken care of. And the times that I've been on the golf course with somebody that could be a potential client or somebody that just some business sense of any sort, we don't really talk about business. You talk about your golf game.
Well, first of all, I think it would be insulting to talk about business when you're playing golf. And I play every single chance I get. And most of the time it's with somebody that I have some kind of a business relationship with. And I don't think anybody actually conducts business on the golf course. I think they do it before they go out or they do it after they go out. But I can absolutely assure you that there are many business deals that have been broken on the golf course or fail to go ahead because of what happens on the golf course.
Please expand on that.
Well, people are always noticing when somebody is very different than they are, especially on the golf course. So if you're playing with someone who is somewhat different than your personality profile, the things that you do that are different than they would do catch their attention. And just like in business or any other relationship, when somebody does something that catches our attention, we have to make sense of it. And so we start making judgments internally about why they did that. And those judgments lead to impressions about that person that may linger long after that golf game. In fact, I can promise you they do linger forever. So when we do something that hits somebody the wrong way on the golf course, that gives them a reason then to say, you know, I'm not so sure I want to do business with this person. I'll give you an example.
Please.
I have a client that's a senior automotive executive. And he takes his sales team away once a year, and they have a fabulous sales meeting, and then they follow it with a couple of afternoons of golf. And this one particular year, he gave them all wonderful gifts as usual, including a golf clinic and wind shirts and hats and then a dozen Pro V1 Titleist golf balls.
The necessary things that you do when you have some sort of tournament. You got to supply them with crap.
Exactly, because you want everybody to have a good time, and he was really proud of them and wanted them to know that he was proud of what they had accomplished. Mm-hmm. And there was one fellow named Warren who was in the group, and Warren was somebody that just always kind of rubbed this executive the wrong way. He hadn't been there long, but everybody kind of knew the executive, whose name was Ray, didn't like Warren all that much. Just something about him bothered him. So in the best of good intentions, the other guys on the team said, well, let's pair Ray and Warren in the golf round today because that'll give them a real good chance to get to know each other better.
Interesting.
Anyway, so off they go, and they're so excited, world-class golf course, sunny, beautiful, and they tee off, and Warren was a little nervous at first, but Ray, being the leader that he was, made him feel at ease and got him to relax and bantering and conversing with him.
And that's Warren, why Ray is the boss.
Go ahead. What?
I was saying that's why Ray is the boss. He can do that.
Yeah, he's the boss. And so Warren mistook that for, I guess, license to make a total, complete fool of himself. So anyway, he talked everybody's ears off. He wanted to be the life of the party. I guess his nervousness just got over, you know, just took him over. And Warren was a very extroverted social golfer, and Ray was a very tough challenger golfer, very bottom line, likes to win, is out there because he thinks it's important, and he really enjoys his game. So the worst thing was that in 8 holes, this guy lost all 12 of the Titleist Pro V1 golf balls that he'd been given. And he turned to Ray, his boss, and said, hey, I lost all the balls. Can you give me some more?
Ooh.
So, and he was talking everybody's ears off, and the other players were really regretting what they had done. So the round did not go well. Well, that night, they actually invited me to dinner because they thought that Ray might take him apart at dinner if I wasn't there to kind of calm things down. So I thought, well, it can't be. Well, after a wonderful dinner and cocktails, they were talking about all the good times they'd had in the past and really appreciating Ray for being such a good leader for them and so forth. And they mentioned that he had given them a wonderful golf club the year before, and they all used it, and they all really played well with it that day. And this Warren says, I can't believe this. You gave them all a brand new driver last year, and I just asked you for a few golf balls, and you got mad at me? Well, I'm not making this up. Ray came out of his chair and went across the table trying to grab Warren. And the other guys had to hold him back, and there wasn't any bloodshed. But I can tell you that 3 weeks later, Warren was not employed there.
Big surprise.
And it wasn't because of his losing the golf balls. It was because his behavior reinforced everything that was nagging at Ray in the first place. His inability to listen to anybody, his failure to be prepared, his lack of response to other people, his lack of sensitivity to other people, and number one was very poor judgment. So just watching him that day, Ray learned everything he really wanted to know about the guy, and that was pretty much it.
That's a fabulous story, and painful. I would think that if Warren was talking everybody's ear off during the round, don't give him drinks at night. He's not going to stop. He's not going to stop talking.
Well, everybody was so tense that they all were drinking.
Yeah.
And, you know, because they just were so glad it was over, and they felt responsible too for pairing those two. So that's a place where people who really want consensus and want everybody to get along and have really good intentions can have very bad outcomes.
And that's an interesting story in regards to employer-employee situation on the golf course. But you also hear of many executives who it's so interesting to see that it's published on a regular basis, these CEOs, you know, Fortune 100 CEOs, and they're very low handicaps.
Yes.
But are they really conducting business on the golf course?
Well, I don't think they're conducting it on the golf course, but I think they are making up their mind about you. A lot of them are cagey enough to take you to play golf so they can learn something about you. And one of those executives is the head of a utility down here in Florida. And he's very much a traditional golfer. That means he loves and respects the game. He is a person who avoids conflict and looks for consensus and, you know, just really loves tradition and precedent and respect and fairness. And he took some clients, as utilities often do, he took some clients that were very big contractors, and they all paid their own way, but they went to Ireland to play golf. And it was very demanding conditions, of course, but it was Mecca, you know, really Scotland and Ireland. Any good golfer wants to go there.
Sure.
And so the conditions were so bad that one of the guests was losing a lot of golf balls, and he was a challenger golfer, and he kind of hit them to the left and hit them to the right. He hit them a long way and hit them really hard. They just never went in the fairway, what little fairway there was there. And the utility CEO was hitting straight down the fairway. You know, he's always right in the middle because he's a traditional golfer. He's got a, you know, a set routine. So about hole number 14, the guest, who was in fact doing deals with the utility, said, you know, I think we're penalized enough with these conditions that we shouldn't be penalized with a penalty stroke when we lose a ball. I propose that we just change the rules right now, and we don't get penalized if we lose a ball.
Oh, no. It's not a good thing to do.
So the utility leader says, I don't know what game you're playing, but I'm playing golf.
Oh.
And in golf, you get penalized when you lose a ball. And I don't think he really ever spoke to that vendor again.
Sounds like golf could be a bad thing for business.
Oh, it can be a bad thing if you don't watch what you're doing and who you're playing with. And one of the things we want young executives to know is if their company invests the money in sending them out to play client golf, for that day, they need to suspend the reasons they play golf and concentrate on what the company sent them out there to do, which is to be aware of the client's needs and wants, and to watch their body language and make sure that they're doing everything they can to make that client feel comfortable that day.
Yeah, in many ways, your guard is down when you're out on the golf course versus when you're sitting across a desk negotiating with somebody. It really changes it. I mean, for those listeners who haven't heard the previous conversation with Jennifer on Golf Smarter, we ask you to go back and listen to it, because she's making reference to these different golf personalities that we talked about at length in that previous episode. Your guard is down. You're in a different situation, and you're seen in a different light, and you can really make some mistakes.
Well, you know, we had a president once that said he could compartmentalize his personal from his private business and in his public business, and not a lot of people bought that. Well, the same thing happens on the golf course. You can't say, well, gosh, I'm all business and about integrity and honesty and when I'm doing business with you, but when we're out here on the golf course, I just want to win at any cost and have that, you know, be compatible in the way the person looks at you. So it is true. I mean, you're absolutely right. You hit it right on the head. People don't think that they're being observed in the same context when they're out on the golf course. They think, oh, we're just out here having fun and all those other things are suspended for now and we can just be ourselves. And so people who would never think of getting intoxicated at lunch might get intoxicated on the golf course. You know, because they think, well, these are different rules. But the bottom line is, when you are different than the people that you're around, they're watching that. You know, they're watching, why is that behavior so different? And what is the motive behind it? And what is this fellow's intentions? And if they don't come out and ask you, they will make up their own answers. And sometimes, more often than not, those answers aren't going to be good ones.
We've had conversations before talking about how probably about 20% of golfers are very serious about the rules, about going out on a regular basis, about worrying about the score every time and you know, dropping a second ball or things like that. And 80%, maybe that's a high number, but 80% of golfers are those who just want to go out and enjoy themselves. You know, maybe they get to go out once or twice a month. They don't, you know, they're not that serious about it, but they love to play. And there's nothing wrong with that. But are those the type of people that also, are those the characters that are revealed on golf course and in business? Are they similar?
Absolutely. And what you say about they want to go out and have fun, you know, fun means different things to different people.
Good point.
And so you have the 20% who are absolutely rule-bound, and they are, you know, they're like your own little private USGA official playing with you. I always, when I play with them, I always tell my friends that I don't have to worry about reading the rules because I know such and such is going to inform me of every one of them if I happen to venture toward breaking one. So I just let them do all the work for me on that. And of course, they don't like that, you know, because they think I'm disrespectful of their knowledge, and you know, at times. But of course, I'm not. But I just think that being all caught up in that because I happen to be, as you know, a social golfer, that gets in the way of me having a good time. But each different profile, Fred, has a different view of fun. And so for the 20% who are social golfers, that view of fun means talking, interacting, communicating, telling jokes, telling stories, getting people to talk back with them. Well, what if everybody else in the foursome is introverted? Well, the more quiet the introverts become trying to concentrate on their game, the more noisy the extrovert becomes. The extrovert's so busy talking, they may step on somebody's line. They may talk in their backswing. Extroverts, you know, the social golfers sometimes talk in the middle of their own swings. And so they're just out there having fun, and they're thinking, well, why can't everybody just have fun like this? Well, that's not fun for everybody.
Right.
And for the 10% who are challengers, fun is having a bet. Fun is winning something. Fun is conquering some obstacle. And so for 90%, you know, being beaten or trying to beat somebody else may not come into their idea of fun. And they see that as being pushy or too competitive, whereas for the person who loves competition, that competition is part of what makes golf fun for them. It isn't fun unless there is something like that. But for your 50% who are traditionals, fun for them is taking their time, relaxing, not having any pressure on them, not having anybody arguing over bets or scores. You know, so if that 50% ends up with the other three kinds, you can see that they don't have any fun either. And so we all go out there thinking we're going out to play fun, you know, just to have some fun. But if we're not aware of how the other person defines that fun, we can make some serious blunders with that individual. And I'm telling you, people don't get over what they see on the golf course. And they will tell stories forever about seeing that person move that ball with their foot or, you know, not giving the correct score. I mean, we have people out there that know everybody's score without a scorecard all the time at any point in the match. So if you think you're going to get away with saying something like, well, I can only take a six, so I'll take a six, when you were 16 feet from the hole when you took that six, somebody's going to remember that, and they're going to think that has something to do with the way you do business.
That is so interesting. I've heard so many. I mean, it's one thing that you can go to a golf course, come back 2 years later and say, I remember this hole. It happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really the premise for me starting this program, thinking that we can learn about different golf courses. But you're absolutely right. I recently played with somebody who told me a story about someone that they played with that you never had to report your score to him because he knew everybody's score in the foursome on each hole, and he was keeping score.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and well, this is the kind of – he wasn't talking about the golf course. He remembered the course, but he remembered specifics about how the person was that he played with.
Well, I went to one of the most incredible golf courses privately owned by a major, you know, CEO in this country. I was thrilled to death to be there. And one of the people that played golf with us that day was a former vice president. And I was supportive of that vice president. He happened to have been in the party I support, and I was very supportive of him. And he was out of office at that time. But at the end of the day, we had incredible caddies that day. And at the end of the day, I overheard the caddies talking about how he had stiffed them 3 days in a row. He had not tipped one single caddy. And the golf was complimentary. The food was wonderful. Everything was perfect. And this vice president did not tip one single caddy after all the wonderful service he got. And I want to tell you something. Every one of us in that group, from that day forward, wanted nothing to do with that guy.
Wow.
And so many of the things that we heard about him when he was in office, people disliked him. You know, I just shrugged that off as being politics. But when I saw that, it changed forever my attitude toward him. I can't look at him when he's on television. I can't even look at him.
Oh, that's really great. That's a good one. All right, so now let's create some scenarios here. You're a type of player who loves to follow the rules. You love to gamble when you play. Play different games. You love to win. You're intense about your game. Mm-hmm. You're invited to go out and play golf with somebody, whether it's an employer or a client. Or they're trying to, you know, bring you into the golf game. That's not the important part. The important part is you're invited to play. You're the type of player that isn't in, hard, fast player, loves these things. But the guy that invites you is really laid back about it.
Right.
Okay? What do you need to do? What do you need to know? How do you approach this? How do you ease back on your level?
Well, I absolutely make a point of doing that. And the first thing that, and this happens with me, I know it's hard for you to believe, but it happens with me a lot. And when I'm out with somebody who really is more laid back and not competitive, and they're just really out there kind of get the lay of the land, get to know me a little bit and so forth, I actually kind of automatically tone down my own volume when I'm talking. I curtail my real intense desire to tell him a story about everything that happens out there. And I do more listening and focus more on watching what he's doing, encouraging him. Nothing superficial or phony, but just making a point to see how he's doing, you know, how he's enjoying his game, and encouraging him if I can. But mostly I really am aware that I turn down my volume, turn down my intensity, turn down my desire to tell him a lot of things that I'd normally like to tell him, and try very much to respond as opposed to initiating. Because, you know, quiet, laid-back people, a lot of noise around them really makes them miss the whole experience that they went out there to have in the first place. And so it's a little bit of work for me, but I tend to know that before I go out, that they're very different. And I don't ever say, gosh, do you want to have a little bet on this or anything like that? I wait until somebody asks me.
Yeah.
I never initiate the issue of having a wager or having a contest. And I have a great many friends who really don't ever want to compete. They just want to go out and be together and enjoy the game and play the best they can. And so I personally never initiate the idea of a competition. I always wait to let somebody else do that.
Yeah, that's probably good advice. What happens if they say, okay, so this is the rules today and this is what we're betting and it's a buck a hole, and you're like, oh my God, I just spent $120 to play golf and it's now they want me to put money in and I really can't afford to do this. How do you bow out of gambling? How do you gracefully, you know, ease off going, yeah, I really don't like to gamble when I play golf?
Well, what I would do is I would say, oh my goodness, you know, you're such a better golfer than I am, and you have such an advantage, so if you'll give me two strokes on every hole, I'll take that. I'll take
turn
that
it
bet.
To your advantage. Let's see how smart a negotiator you are.
Yeah, well, you just turn it back on, you know, oh my goodness, I would just get whipped on that one. I mean, I don't know how you could possibly even think that was fair to do that to me. You know, gosh, I feel like such a victim here. You know, I make a joke out of it. But to be honest with you, I probably would take that bet.
You and I are not going to play golf together.
Not that I can afford it. Not because I can afford it, but it's just that if somebody, you know, it's, you know, if somebody is going to be that much of a bully, that's a bully thing to do, really, when you haven't played with somebody before. I mean, that is a real, that discussion right there is an indication that is a challenger golfer and he's trying to throw you off balance. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so the thing of it is, that's what he's trying to do. And so I probably would parry with him a little bit and set up a match where I knew I had a really fair chance of giving him a run for his money, you know, by shaming him into giving me enough strokes that it would really be a contest and not, you know, just a rout of some kind. But when somebody does that, I have to tell you, I've had an experience like that where they did do that to me, and I just never had anything to do with them again. I played the match, and I could see that they were so insecure and they were so disrespectful that it wasn't somebody I'd want to have anything to do with again anyway.
Wow.
So I think you kind of know a little bit about somebody before you go out there, but when somebody tries to bully the other group into being off balance or feeling like, you know, every shot is incredibly pressured, that's not a good person to play with. So right. It depends on how nicely the person did it. I'm pretty feisty, so if somebody was doing it from a real bully position, I might, you know, try to bully them back a little.
Yeah, and also agree to the rules before the game begins.
Always.
I mean, you told that story. Well, it's like I played recently with some guys, and we did, you know, everyone has their own interpretation of the rules, and I interpreted a push means it's a push. You go on to the next hole, and it doesn't count. It doesn't go anywhere. And
right.
At the end, the other guy goes, no, a push carries over to the next hole. It's like, what are you talking about? It's a push. And so it's like no, you have to have 18. No, you don't. It's like you can win 2-1, you know, because you got the same score on all these different holes. And so it was a big debate. And so we called over the GM of the golf course and goes, did you guys agree upon this before the round? And went, huh? So,
right. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's the same thing like pick and clean, you know, whether you can lift your ball out of mud
right.
or not, on all those kind of things. You know, the times I see people bring that up is like hole number 15, when all of a sudden they're in a bad place and they say, why don't we just do this today? Well, you know, you haven't been doing that all day. The other players haven't been doing it. So to me, that is a blatant faux pas in trying to change the rules. But back to the business golf, you know, if it depends on what you're going out there to do. And if you're going out there to build a relationship and to, you know, create some kind of foundation for doing business, and a person says, you know, I like to hit two balls off of the first four tees. You know, if they say that, then you just have to say, well, obviously golf is not what we're playing today. and I'm his guest, or he's my guest, and I didn't come out here to, today is not the day to go for my best score or to win something. Today is just to figure out who this fellow is and see if I can make him comfortable enough to do business with me, if in fact I choose to do business with him after that.
Yeah.
So
I play with a friend on a regular basis who I just know that if he's not happy with his tee shot, he's going to drop another ball. It just not even his tee shot, on many shots. He'll just pull out another ball and hit it. And I'm so glad that he's a friend, because I don't know if I'd want to do business with the guy.
Well,
you know?
That's true. But the things that you learn about business is so important on the golf course. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I said before, you can get somebody really drunk to find out who they are. You can do a profile on them, or you can take them out to play golf. And somewhere in that 18 holes, they're going to expose themselves for who they really are.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, and like for instance, let's take the technical golfer who plays by the rules all the time. He knows the rules, and say you're thinking of hiring this person, mm-hmm. or you're thinking of promoting this person, and he's really rule bound, and also he can't make a decision when he's between clubs. Say he gets a distance that's not comfortable for him, and he goes back to his bag two or three times, and he takes one club to the ball, and he walks back to to the bag, he takes another club to the ball, and you know you're just sitting there for Pete's sakes, you know, pick something and hit the ball.
It's like the honeymooners.
Well, what you're learning about that person is he is, you know, he is not decisive. You know, he is so worried about making a mistake, so self-critical, so determined to have all the data and all the facts in line before he executes the shot, you know that's going to translate over into business.
Oh, excellent.
So if you're looking for somebody who needs to be autonomous, make decisions, be accountable for those decisions, act under fire, then obviously when you see that happen two or three times, that isn't the guy that's going to do that.
Mm. Also, if you're a technical golfer, and you go out and play with Warren, we talked about
right.
You might want to ask them beforehand, you know, if you've noticed things that they're doing or they're having frustrations, you might want to ask them if they want instruction, because the worst thing you can do on a golf course is tell people how to correct things.
Especially when you hit the ball 3 feet the next time you get up to hit it. And, you know, I mean, so, and there's, you're telling, and now I want to tell you something, you know, more men and women are playing golf in business these days.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, women are starting to be much more comfortable playing golf with the men in their companies, and men are starting to see that women can play pretty well, and they're starting to invite them to things.
Yeah.
Well, there is some unknown, you know, ripple in the universe that for some reason tells every man out there, whether he's got a 35 handicap or a 15 handicap or whether he can't get the ball airborne to save his life, there's something that tells him that he is in a position to tell women how to play golf.
Among other
things. And so when he's, so here you have this man who is playing with a woman, maybe he doesn't play with women very often, and the first time the woman hits a little worm burner or pulls it to the left, this guy who has a 30 handicap starts giving her a lecture and rules on how to hit this ball.
Mm.
Well, that's the quickest way to get a club wrapped around your head that I know of. You know, I mean, if you can hit the ball, feel free to say, by the way, would you like me to tell you what you're doing there? The person can say yes or no.
Right.
But they just automatically, I guess they get it from the way they behave at home, but they just automatically get on the golf course. And, you know, some of these women are their bosses, by the way.
Yeah.
So they just automatically feel free to lend their expertise and instruction to a person, I think, because it's a woman. And I think men really have to watch out for that.
No. Oh, so, well, that's great. Jennifer, once again, I truly enjoy our conversations. I just get so much out of it. I learn so much. And I think this is the kind of content that doesn't necessarily come out in other conversations about golf or even on other programs about golf, and I just value it so much. Your website again, golfmindrx.com. Highly recommend that if this is at all interesting to you, that you go ahead and review that website, and also go back and listen to the previous episode that Jennifer and I did on Golf Smarter. Jennifer, thanks again. It's great talking to you.
Thank you, Fred. I always love talking to you.
Isn't she sweet? Golf Smarter number 135 is brought to you by Audible.com. When you go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter, you receive a free 14-day trial of the Audible Listener Gold Monthly Plan, which includes one free download. And since we talked about business on this week's show, let's take a sample of Timothy Ferris's new audiobook called The 4-Hour Work Week. I mean, isn't work just an excuse to pay for golf?
The most fundamental of American questions is hard for me to answer these days, and luckily so. If it weren't, you wouldn't be holding this book in your hands. So, what do you do? Assuming you can find me, hard to do, and depending on when you ask me, I'd prefer you didn't, I could be racing motorcycles in Europe, scuba diving off a private island in Panama, resting under a palm tree between kickboxing sessions in Thailand, or dancing tango in Buenos Aires. The beauty is, I'm not a multimillionaire, nor do I particularly care to be. If someone asks me now, and is anything but absolutely sincere, I explain my lifestyle of mysterious means simply. I'm a drug dealer. Pretty much a conversation ender.
Yeah, I bet. Again, that's Ray Porter reading the 8 hour and 23 minutes of The 4-Hour Work Week by Timothy Ferris. It could be yours for free if you sign up for a new account today. If you decide that you want to cancel your membership, that's okay, because you get to keep your free download. Go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter and sign up today. Like listening to podcasts, it's a great way to get reading done when you're doing something else. Again, the first taste is free. audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. For a long time, you've asked for more content from Golf Smarter, and it's very exciting for me to say that between Golf Smarter and Golf Smarter Tips, we are now providing you with golf information and golf instruction 5 days each week. Again, if you haven't checked out Golf Smarter Tips lately, please get your free subscription from iTunes or at golfsmartertips.com. Right now, here's the schedule. Mondays, Mental Game is talked about with Michael Anthony. Tuesdays, of course, is Golf Smarter. Wednesday, The Wedge Guy, Terry Kaler, talks about and answers your questions about the short game. Thursdays is Swing Mechanics with Kirk Jones. And Friday, All About Putting with Jeff Mangum. Remember, because we only cover one topic per episode, Golf Smarter Tips are less than 10 minutes each. And of course, each Friday, we also bring you Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf, where Kenny Nicholson and I talk about the golf equipment and technology with the most important engineers in the industry. Today's closing quote is brought to you by CaddyTips.com. Receive professional written advice on how to play many of the courses in the United States, Scotland, and Ireland. Download, print, and play better when you're armed with the information from the pros at CaddyTips.com. And as a Golf Smarter listener, you get 50% off all of your downloads. I promise that you can pay a lot more for yardage guides that give you far less information on how to beat the course. Go to CaddyTips.com/GolfSmarter for more information. It's CaddyTips.com/GolfSmarter. Since both of our sponsors are kind of literary, okay, that's a stretch, but bear with me, I want to share a part of an email that I received from Rob Nebinger of Conshohocken, Pennsylvania last week. I like this. It's a lot longer, and, here it goes like this. Dear family and friends, many of you may not know, but I have been very busy over the last 2 years putting my thoughts and ideas together in a book. I'm very proud of the results, and to assist in the marketing, I'm asking friends and family to help me out. I believe my new book on golf gives the reader valuable playing tips and insider information that I have gained through my years of struggle and experience. I'm hopeful you'll find this as a useful tool to help you enjoy the game that much more as you enjoy the great outdoors. Okay, so here's titles of a couple for which there are actually 21 chapters of this book. All 21 will be posted on the Golf Smarter blog. But here's just a couple of the chapters from this great book. It's Chapter 1, How to Properly Line Up Your Fourth Putt. Chapter 5, When to Give the Ranger the Finger. Chapter 12, Why Your Spouse Doesn't Care That You Birdied the Fifth. Chapter 19, Throwing Your Clubs, an Effective Stress Reduction Technique. And finally, Chapter 21, Why Male Golfers Will Pay $5 for a Beer from the Cart Girl and Give Her a $3 Tip, but Will Balk at $4.50 at the 19th hole and Stiff the Bartender. If you have any quotes, comments, suggestions, or questions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Hi, this is Terry Kaler, president of Eidolon Golf and blogger at theWedgeGuy.com, inviting you to listen to my short game lessons each week on the Golf Smarter Tips podcast. I'll provide insights on how to improve your game from 100 yards and in and answer questions submitted by golfers worldwide. If we use your question on the show, you'll receive a free wedge from Eidolon Golf. Tune in for details. The Golf Smarter Tips podcast is free on iTunes or at golfsmartertips.com.